So then my writing became about redefining what power is for us, and, you know, for us as individuals, but also for those of us that work in teams, or for those of us that identify as leaders or thought leaders, that power is actually a regenerative force, and that we all have the capacity and ability to do something in a particular way.
Welcome to CEO on the Go, the show about personal and professional growth for busy leaders like you. I'm Gail Lance, and I'm here to help you think differently, solve big problems, and inspire change. It's tough to do on your own and even with a team, but it is possible. So let's get started. Welcome back to another special episode. I hope you enjoyed the last two episodes featuring Fortune 500 CEO Keith Demmings with Assurant. Those were really great episodes, and I hope that if you miss them, you'll go back and listen, because there's so much value that he shared. I've had some amazing guests lately, and today is no exception. I'm so excited to introduce you to author Kemi Nekvapil. Kemi is one of the world's leading credentialed coaches for female executives and entrepreneurs. She's the author of the internationally best-selling book, Power, A Woman's Guide to Living and Leading Without Apology. She's also an endurance athlete, running 42 to 100 kilometer races, and she's a budding flower farmer. Kemi is passionate about helping leaders and teams unlock obstacles that prevent value-based leadership. Now, this episode is first airing in March, which is Women's History Month, so it's especially appropriate to listen to her message and point of view about power. This is an important message for men to hear as well, especially to better understand a different perspective that's actually quite common among many women. And at the very least, I hope our conversation challenges you to consider your own power, what it means to you, and how you can use it most effectively, and to become more aware of and supportive of other people who may have a sense of powerlessness, just like Kemi did originally in her life. She has an incredible story that has helped shape who she is and how she navigates the world now. She's actually redefining power. And I especially like her take on accepting the challenges as realities and determining what needs to happen next. So no matter how you view power, it's a good reminder that people may not share your same view. So listen to Kemi's perspective and consider it a call to action to live and lead without apology. Enjoy my conversation with Kemi Nekvapil. Kemi, welcome to CEO on the Go podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today.
I am so excited to be here, Gail. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. Well, I know that we met at a writing room in Santa Fe last year, and I knew at that time you would have a great message to bring to my audience. And I know you shared your story. I would love to hear at least an abbreviated version of that, but I know that the message you have is helping others really claim their power. So why don't you just start out by letting us know, you know, what is power? How do you define what power is? Because there are a lot of people that talk about it, but I love your unique view on it.
Well, there's how I defined power before I started writing the book, how I now know power is defined from the Oxford Dictionary. Your listeners will probably hear that I have an English accent, though I have been living in Australia for 20 years, so I'm starting to lose my consonants. I'm trying my best, though, to keep them. But before I started writing the book, for me, power was very much this idea around dominance and scarcity and dictatorship and, you know, totalitarian regimes. As I started writing the book, I wanted to research, what does the word power actually mean? Obviously, as a writer, I love words. And because I'm English, I will go to the Oxford Dictionary. And the definition of power is the ability or capacity to do something in a particular way. So then that made me think, it's so interesting, because for many of us, power is a negative, especially for those of us that identify as women. And it's not something that we necessarily want. It is something that has been done to us, or we have a sense of giving our power away to other people. So then my writing became about redefining what power is for us. And, you know, for us as individuals, but also for those of us that work in teams, or for those of us that identify as leaders or thought leaders, that power is actually a regenerative force and that we all have the capacity and ability to do something in a particular way.
Yeah. So is there a difference in terms of how men and women view power then?
Yes, if I'm honest, I think for many men, and actually I'm even going to say the caveat is for many men, I think that for white, able-bodied, neurotypical, cisgendered, heterosexual, possibly Christian men, the idea of power is kind of an inherent force that they feel that they have and that they can assert. And I am married to a white, Christian, able-bodied, heterosexual, you know, male. And we've definitely had conversations where for him, it's kind of this idea of, well, I was just kind of raised within society and within the world and within culture as an Australian man, I kind of had power inherently. Now, for me, as a black female navigating mainly white spaces, that has not been my experience. And so obviously I can't speak for everyone, but for anyone that kind of has any form of marginalized identity, we have found ourselves in situations where we either have had our power taken away, or we have told we don't have any power, or because we're very smart and we want to survive, we give our power away strategically because it's the way to stay safe in particular situations or in particular rooms.
That's interesting. And so I think it's so important to understand where people have come from, their story, their upbringing, their culture, to know why they think or feel the way that they do. And you gave an amazing story at the conference that we attended, and I would love for you to be able to share a little bit so that listeners can help know more about how you came to know power the way that you did through your unique story. Can you share a little bit of that?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I was born in the 1970s in the UK to Nigerian middle-class parents. And at that time in the 60s and 70s, many, many Nigerian middle-class families fostered their children to white families in the UK. My parents made the decision that most of our parents make, which is what is going to give my children the best educational opportunities that they could possibly have. And for some migrants, that's, you know, moving countries. It's different for different families, obviously, but that was something that my parents could do. So I was one of the tens of thousands of middle-class Nigerian children that were fostered to white families in the 1970s. And my experience, I'd had five separate foster parents from the ages of, from when I was a baby and to when I was 13 years old, I landed on the step of my final set of foster parents. And in those experiences, one thing was very clear to me, that as a young black girl, I had no power. That within those foster families, some of which I was deeply loved, and in fact, my children now, who are, you know, late teens, my last set of foster parents are one of their grandparent sets, you know. So, you know, deeply loved by some of those foster families and the complete opposite in some of those other foster families. But the very clear message from society was, as a black girl, I had no power. In some of those families, I had no power and had no agency. And so for me, I learned how to navigate the world with a sense of powerlessness. I never questioned it. I never thought, why do I feel the way that I do? I just felt, well, I'm black, so this is how I'm supposed to feel all of the time. And then to add the intersectionality of gender as well, I think for many women, regardless of their background, we are conditioned to believe that our power comes from our availability to everybody else. And we see that play out in so many different ways. And even this topic of power, I was working with a CEO the other day as an executive coach. She is someone that has the title of power and is very, very good as a human-based, value-aligned leader. And yet when she's in her family unit, feels completely powerless, you know, in regards to origin family. And so this topic of power comes up, as you said, depending on where we come from, the society we've grown up in, the culture that we grow up in, will depend on where and when give our power away.
Yeah. So what created the shift for you? When did you begin to see that you do have power, or that you could create it or cultivate that?
It wasn't so much kind of a one light bulb moment, but I would say that the beginning of this sense of I get to have a say in how my life goes was when I landed with my last set of foster parents. So I was around 13 years old. One of the things about being fostered is you don't always remember exactly the dates because you don't have the same family telling you again and again, oh, do you remember when you were seven and you tripped over the step and, you know, that sort of thing. So I was around 13 and I have been homeless for a period before then, not on the streets, but sleeping in friends' families' houses from school. And I arrived at my last set of foster parents with two plastic bags of my belongings. And I always joke, you know, plastic wasn't such a bad deal in that time. I would have chosen bamboo or something if I'd had a choice. And my foster mum, the day after I arrived, said, you know, we need to get you some basic things. We need to get you underwear and we need to get you some things. And so we went to one of my favorite department stores in the UK. For any listeners from the UK might know, Marks and Spencer's. And I remember, Sue, my foster mum asking me what color underwear do you want? Do you want the pink or the multicolored? And I sort of didn't hear her. And she asked me again, Kemi, what do you want? Do you want the pink or the multicolored? And I looked at her and she looked at me and I could see that she was looking at me strangely. And I don't believe that the rest of the shop slowed down, but I suddenly had this realization, oh, she's asking me to choose. She's asking me to have a say in something that I want for myself. And that was my first experience of that. And I wouldn't have called it power at the time, but I remember thinking there is something about the way that I currently feel about this that I don't want to let go of. So that was probably my first sense of I might get a say in how my life goes. And then the next was a little bit later. I was around 18 years old. I read my first personal development book, which some of the listeners may have read, The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield. And that was my first introduction that we actually get a say in how our life goes. We actually get a say in with who we spend our time with and who we get to be in the world. My experience and my upbringing had taught me life is life. You get what you're given. You make the best of it. That was what I had grown up with. So suddenly this idea of, oh, I can shift and I can change and I can become more of myself or better, or I can work on my trauma, or I can heal myself. That just opened up a whole new world for me.
I love how it started with such a small act or just a tiny little realization.
It's what I call the little big things. You know, the very small things. Even when I'm speaking with my clients, you know, they'll say, oh, it seems so stupid, doesn't it? But, you know, A, B, C, or D. And I'm like, no, these are the little big things.
Yeah. And translating that into the workplace is so important to do, to look for those opportunities where you can really take your power or appreciate those chances when you can see yourself differently and step into your leadership role a little bit differently.
Yeah, 100%. And what I find as a coach is that for so many people, we set these massive goals or these massive kind of projects and programs, and then we paralyze ourselves because it's all too big and we feel like we're drowning or we're overwhelmed. We don't know where to start. And so my thing is always, what is the first action? Like bringing it all the way back. And generally, Gail, to be honest, the first action, which either shocks people or relieves them, is it's generally a conversation or an email. Like it's not, I need to run a marathon tomorrow. Like it's never that big. It is always, what is the first small action that is going to move you closer toward the leader you want to be, or the parent that you want to be, or the friend that you want to be? And it's much smaller, but it doesn't mean that because the action is small, it doesn't have a big impact on the people around us.
Yeah, that's so good. I know you do so much work with women in particular, and I was curious to know what you think one of the biggest obstacles is that keeps women from stepping into their power.
Well, kind of what I said at the beginning, I think for a lot of women, the form of power that we've experienced hasn't been something that we necessarily want to be a part of, so we can move away from it. And I don't even speak, when I speak about power, I don't talk about soft power or pink power or personal power. It's just like, it's power. It's power for men, women, non-binary. It is the same for all of us, but where we start from and the privileges that we may have along the way will be different. I would say the themes that I find with women and power is what I've said around the socialization, that we're told that our value and worth comes from giving our power to others. And the only twice in the women that I've spoken with, either with audiences when I'm speaking or with clients, I've met two women that have said that they have never had an issue with power. And the reason why, and this will be, I think, really impactful for any dads that are listening to the program. The reason why these women have never questioned their power is because their dads told them that they had it. And what I find interesting about that is that these men knew their privileges of their gender, and they knew that if they wanted their daughters to have a sense of power in the world, it was for them. Now, I have many women, friends, family, you know, clients that have had mums that have said, you can go out there and do whatever you want, but they're operating within a patriarchal society. You know? So it's different.
Yeah. And I'm an example of what you just described. I would say my dad was the one who was most impactful in influencing me to do what I'm doing now, you know, in the way that I'm doing it, I think. And it's not that I haven't had to work in my own way, you know, to step into my leadership in the way that I want to, but I do credit him with being able to say, you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah. And I think, and that is so different than coming from a gender where they have basically been told, and my husband, you know, has said that to me, that idea of the world is your oyster and you can do whatever you want. And, you know, even just being married to him for the last 22 years, it's kind of, you know, I used to watch him when we were together and I was like, cannot believe you get to operate in the world the way that you do. Like, but what's so beautiful about that is that he just goes, yeah, you know, that's the privilege of being a white male. And he uses it in really powerful ways. And that's the thing, you know, as I talk about in the book, pretending we don't have privileges is not powerful. It is so powerful. And we can go, yep, the reality is that by birth or by circumstances or by luck, and there are some privileges that we've worked for, you know, I have a lot of privileges in my life, but I don't have the privilege of race and I don't have the privilege of gender. But the other privileges that I have by luck, by hard work, by circumstance, I use in really powerful ways to be a mirror for others, to uplift, to create spaces. So I think there's more power in saying, yes, I have privileges and that sucks. Maybe in some situations it's not fair. And yet I do. And how do I get to use my privilege in powerful ways? You know, one thing I'll talk about is pretending we don't have privilege is boring. You know, having guilt about our privileges is really boring. It's more about, so I have this, what can I do with this?
You know, I work with men and women, but a lot of women that I come across, both in my professional and personal life, will say, I can't do this because I'm a woman, or I'm being held back because I'm a woman. I'm not valued in the same way, or I'm misunderstood because I'm a woman in leadership. What would you say to those kinds of comments where women really are struggling and they're using that as their reason?
Obviously, each leader's story is different. And for me as a coach, I'm very wary of, you know, giving a blanket statement, you know, but I think what I would say to that is yes, and yes, that is true. You know, I'm sure, Gail, we have both worked with women where they are the only person in the room, the only female at the board table, they're talked over or their idea is taken, and it's all true. And it's yes, and the and, depending on the client maybe, and what are you going to do about it? Or, and what are the things that we need to put in place so that when you're in that room and your knees are trembling and you say your opinion, who is the person that you call as soon as you leave the boardroom? You know, who are the sponsors that you have within your organization? Who are the other women? What is your network? Because what we need to do is to create networks of other women or other marginalized diverse groups to go, this is my experience. It's the same for me to say, I experience certain, I have certain experiences in the world because I'm Black. They're 100% true. Yes, and, you know, so I make sure that I have a sistership around me of other Black females that when I go and say this happened, they're like, yeah, that is not great. And I go, yeah, it's not. And then we get on with our day, you know, or depending on what the situation is, we may have to have a conversation or, but it's not dismissing that that is not truth, because that's the way that we just damage and gaslight each other. And we know there's enough gaslighting going on in the world. It is, yes, I believe you. I understand that you're in a male-dominated industry or you're in a male-dominated team, or whether that's someone that has a identifies differently or has neurodivergency. It's like, yeah, it is more difficult for you to be in those rooms when there's a lot of noise and a lot of sound. And what do you need to put in place so that you can bring your leadership to the fore and know there's a reason why you're in that room, because it's not an accident.
Interesting. I have a follow-up question. What would you advise men who are trying to be more sensitive to women who might feel like they don't have power, or they're trying to help them leverage their power even more? Is there something specific that they might do or consider to be most effective?
You know, as a coach, I'm obsessed with questions. I think it's the most powerful thing instead of giving answers. So I would say for the male leaders that are listening, ask the women that you work with how they feel in certain rooms. That's it. Some of them may say, great, not a problem. Love it. Love it. Love the energy. It's all great. It's all great. And also, some of them may lie because they don't feel safe in those rooms and they don't want to lose their spot, you know? So, but I would definitely say ask. You know, I am aware. Actually, I'll share a story. My husband is a silk, so top level barrister here in Australia. He was in a court case. There were 11 men and one woman. At the end of a massive day in court, the male judge looked at all of the barristers, the defendants, everybody. Remember, there's one woman in the room, and said, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today. And my husband just kind of looked at the female colleague, didn't say anything. Later on, we were chatting after, and he said, this is what happened in court today. And, you know, I'm just not sure. Like, it was so obvious she was the only woman and this industry. And what do you think I should do? And I was like, babe, she needs to know. I said, because she knows what happened in that room. She needs to know that at least one other person knows it happened. You know, go and have a conversation with her, even if it's just, I want to let you know, I know what happened and that was not okay. And so he did. And it wasn't a big conversation and he didn't have to save her or make it better for her. He just wanted to say, I heard it. I saw it. That was not great. Just to, you know, I believe you. That was it. Not to gaslight her experience. It's those little things that any majority in the room, you know, it could be a room of all females, but there's a non-binary person in the room, or it could be a room of all neurotypical people. And it's the one neurodivergent person in the room. It's going and having the courage to say, hey, how is it going for you? You know, being the person with ADHD or whatever it is in the room, is there anything we can do to support your leadership? Or it could be, you know, as doesn't happen often, but, you know, within medicine, there can be the only male within a space of females. And he is definitely having a different experience, especially with patients sometimes. I think even us, we have our internalized gender biases around, I'd like to be looked after by a female nurse because women are the carers, you know, or men that are in childcare. It is definitely a different experience for men in childcare than it is for women. There's a lot of suspicion. There's a lot of concern from parents. So I think, you know, whatever the marginalized person in the room, those of us that are the majority, we can have the foresight to know that their experience in that room is not the same as ours. It just isn't.
Yeah. It's just so important to keep reinforcing the same message about really understanding the key differences in experience and how people come to be who they are. And to respect that. I do a lot of work trying to help people better understand each other in terms of their, you know, communication style and what drives them and what motivates them. And so I think understanding how they understand what power is, you know, and how they can leverage that is really a critical thing to do as well.
And one thing for me in kind of redefining the word power. So, you know, I broke it up into an acronym. So looking at P for presence, O for ownership, W for wisdom, E for equality, and R for responsibility. And what I've found since writing the book, and even, you know, working with people before, is that starting with presence is great. You know, we can't make a shift in our lives or in our leadership until we're present to what is actually going on. And then we're stepping into ownership of, okay, so there are stories that I've inherited, there are stories that I've made up, there's stories that I have lived. What are the stories that make me stand in my power, and what are the stories that have me give my power away? And then we look at, you know, what is the innate wisdom that we all have within us? And it's so easy to outsource kind of our intuition and our gut. But I think most of us, when we go against our intuition and gut, regret it pretty quickly after
we do
that.
I've done that, yeah.
Yeah, for different reasons. Like, I knew that wasn't a great collaboration. I knew the way they spoke to me then, I should have said no, but I said yes. And just to get curious, not about self-blaming, but like, why did I give my power away? Like, where can I take ownership for what it was? Or why did I give my power away when I knew that I should not have collaborated with that person? And then we're looking at equality, which we've kind of spoken about in terms of privileges. You know, the world is not equal. We know that. Pretending that it is, you know, I'm a parent. this idea when we're raising our children of kind of this idea of like, it needs to be fair. I think the most powerful thing is to let our children know as early as possible, things are not fair. Your brother's going to get different things. Yeah. Your brother's going to get different things because he's a different person or because he's older or because he goes to a different school. And you're going to get what you get because you are who you are, because you're a different person. This idea of trying to make it fair, I think, doesn't set our children up well. And it sets it up to be really hard as parents later on. And then the final one is responsibility, which I'm sure for you as well, Gail, that is like the juice of life, you know, that we are responsible for not necessarily what's happened to us, but how we respond to what happens. If we're in a room and one of our colleagues is rude or is bullying, that is not our fault. There is absolutely, that is not okay. But how we respond to that is our responsibility. And if we can't respond to it because it starts affecting our mental health, then we go to someone, we get the support that we need to be able to take on what is happening. But for me, this idea of power, it's not linear. You know, for me, I can stand on a stage as a professional speaker and speak to thousands of people, get off of that stage, go into the local shop and experience racism. And for me, in that moment, my power is gone. And so my next step, the first action that I take is to call someone that understands that experience. And it could be my white husband. Many times it has been my white husband. There's a reason we stayed together for so long. Or it could be one of my girlfriends, or it could be another colleague. I just want to be heard. And then I get to be back in my power again. So power, the way that I talk about it and write about it, isn't linear. It is, we will give our power away at Christmas with our dad, you know, and we'll give our power away with our teenager when they slam the door on us, or we'll give our power away to our direct report. But then it's looking at, okay, what do I need to be present to? What do I need to take ownership of? Where did I not trust my gut instinct? Where did I not trust my wisdom? And then looking at, where am I feeling unequal in this power dynamic? Where am I giving away my equality? And then finally, what can I take responsibility for, or what is the next action that I can take? For me, power is not linear. It's a dance. We're going to be in and out of power all of the time.
Yes, so good. This is a good time to let listeners know they need to pick up a copy of your book, because you go even deeper into those principles that you teach so well and write about. So I really encourage people to get a copy of Power. It's called A Woman's Guide to Living and Leading Without Apology. So, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes as well. I know we're getting to the point where we need to wrap up. And I always like to ask if you have a final piece of advice or just tips that you would like to share to help women or men and or men really step into their power in the way that they need to.
I think I'd start with presence. I think one of the most powerful questions that we can ask ourselves is to look at what is and what is not working in our lives/leadership. For me, as a Dare to Lead trained facilitator, we're always looking at human-based leadership. I do not believe that we are a different leader in the office than we are in our homes. And so to look at what is working in my life and what is not working, and then to get really curious about where power is related in the areas that are not working.
That's so good. And I know people will want to be in touch with you. What is the best way for people to reach out to you if they'd like to connect?
Definitely LinkedIn. I am my name. So Kemi Nekfapil, just come and find me on LinkedIn, and I'd love to say hello and engage.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm so glad we got to spend a few minutes talking about power today. It's such an important topic and it comes up all the time. And I really appreciate your perspective on it that I think so many people will be interested in. So thank you for joining me from so far away to bring such an important message to listeners today.
Oh, Gail, it's so lovely to see you again. And I look forward to connecting soon.
Fantastic. Well, for everyone else listening in, I hope you have a great rest of the week, being the powerful leader that you are and doing the work that matters to you. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, be sure to share this episode with someone else who might benefit, or leave a review. You can join my email list by going to workmatters.com so you don't miss an episode. And there you can learn more about ways we serve mission-driven leaders like you. If there's a challenge you want to discuss, I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, keep growing as a leader, inspiring change, and doing the work that matters to you.